This is Living the RV Dream, episode 140 for Friday, April 24th, 2020.
I'm riding in my RV, wherever I want to be, 'cause I'm free in my RV.
Hello, happy campers. Hello, happy travelers around the world. Boondockers, part-timers, full-timers, RVers. Living the RV dream, right? Well, everybody, hello. I hope you're doing right. I hope you're staying healthy wherever you are. And wherever you're in the world, you're probably in the same situation as we are. You know, still waiting to see what's going to happen, whether... You know, see what options that they're going to start opening up slowly. And it looks like traveling might be the last one. I mean, they're opening all kinds of different businesses in different states. But campgrounds and the state parks, only day use. And we'll see. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed. Of course, Canada and Alaska by now are probably... out of the realm of possibilities, but, you know, the eternal optimist. I'm not gonna cancel anything because I haven't made any reservations, so there's nothing to cancel. So we'll take it one day at a time, whenever I'm able to hitch up and move somewhere, 1 mile at a time. And that's all there is to it. Today I have some mail, but before we get to the mail, by the way, I'm gonna have to interrupt the podcast halfway. Maybe I'll do an intermission, maybe not, because I'm cooking some of my famous beef stew. But now I have the new recipe in the Instant Pot, and as soon as I'm able to travel, I'm gonna make an RV cooking show with the Instant Pot, and I believe my new inverter in Minitini 2 will be able to run the Instant Pot. I still haven't tested it, but. Can you imagine you running the Instant Pot while boondocking? That would be something cool to do. By the way, right now I'm editing the video that's coming after the one that you're going to watch this Sunday. This Sunday, of course, is going to be Yellowstone, and that's that was an amazing place. But then what happened after Yellowstone, I started that, you know, really fast-paced part of the trip. And at some point, I was even after this video, like in Nebraska, I wasn't feeling all that well because I think I taxed my health a little too much, trying to do too much in too little time, you know, keeping up with the live streams and the podcast and the weekly Sunday videos. And that's something that I have to work on the next trip. But we'll see. We might make it a much slower pace trip now in whenever we're able to travel, since we have no plans, really. But in this video, of course, I did the Bear Tooth Highway, which is as you exit Yellowstone through Lamar Valley, through the northeast exit. You're going to the Bear Tooth Highway. It's one of those iconic all-American roads, you know, scenic byways. And it goes all the way to the top of Bear Tooth Pass, which is it's over 10,000 feet. And it was pretty chilly up there. I mean, it felt chilly. I mean, it was probably in the 50s, high 50s, 60. But definitely hotter, I mean, colder than it was. And of course, there's no internet anywhere out there. So I wasn't able to check the weather or anything like that. I mean, I had the thermometer in my vehicle. I should have checked that, I guess. From there, you go down into the valley. Red Lodge is the town. And it was pretty much a non-stop trip all the way to eastern Wyoming. I stayed at this town called Buffalo. They have a nice KOA there. And from there, the next day, of course, and if you saw the movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind, you know, the aliens. And one of the main themes of the movie was this mountain that this guy, you know, kept sculpting and painting. And that mountain happens to be Devil's Tower. There in eastern Wyoming, sacred to like 20 tribes of Native Americans, and it's a very cool place, very very iconic. Once you see it, you know what that is. And I'm assuming most people have seen that sci-fi movie from the late 70s, Close Encounters. At the time when I saw it for the first time, and I was probably preteen. I mean, I was very young. I thought like that was like the coolest movie ever, and even the music is iconic. And well, from Devil's Tower, and that was the same day, by the way, I continued going east. And it was also almost an all-day drive to Rapid City, South Dakota. It was pretty much the rest of the day driving there. And what's in that area? I mean, there's a lot of stuff in that area, and you're going to be mad at me because I only saw one thing, and I believe it's the most iconic thing, and that would be Mount Rushmore. And it was kind of a bummer because the main area that, you know, where they have the flags, apparently, and it's like the main viewing area, it was closed for renovation at the time. We're talking late August 2019. That's where we are now in the timeline. But still, it's one of those iconic, you know, almost bucket. I wouldn't call it bucket list, but almost a bucket list places that you have to visit at least once in your life, especially if you're an American. And you know, there's George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Teddy Roosevelt, and Abraham Lincoln. And by the way, fun fact that I learned while I was there, originally the sculpture was going to be a lot more elaborate. It was all the way down to the waist. But what happened? They ran out of money in 1941. And they said, you know, I guess the four faces look good enough. We'll leave it at that. And that was what happened, apparently. True story. So I didn't spend much time there since everything, you know, the whole area was closed, and you could the cool trail that you have you can do it was closed too. So I decided to continue, and I went to that. It's called Wall Drugstore, and it's just it reminded me a little bit of South of the Border in South Carolina, you know, unapologetically a tourist trap. It's like the story. Apparently, it was a small drugstore here in the middle of nowhere in this town called Wall, South Dakota, and they started offering free ice water to the travelers. You know, apparently, Mount Rushmore had just opened, and they're right at the northern entrance of the Badlands. So they started offering free water to the travelers back then, you know, 1930s, you didn't have air conditioner or anything like that. So that's how they started growing. And nowadays it's like this huge mall, and there's a bunch of restaurants and little shops and even a winery all around it. And inside, you know, it's like this huge place, you know, kind of Western themed. And I didn't spend much time there. I missed the jackalope, which is some invented this animal they have in the back. You know, it's like plexiglass, fiberglass figure that people climb on top and they take pictures. I missed all that, but it wasn't just my kind of place, and maybe it was also my mood at the time. But I decided my time would be better spent going to the Badlands. Badlands National Park, by the way, I was pleasantly surprised. It's one of these rock formations that kind of reminds you of Arizona, like the Grand Canyon, that kind of thing. It's something you don't expect to find there. You know, it's mostly around it. You're already kind of like in the Great Plains there. You know, it's kind of flat and tall grass prairie. You know, there's not a whole lot going on, geologically speaking, at least not to the naked eye. And then you come across this Badlands, and you're gonna see it in the video next Sunday. It's quite a sight to see. And that was all I did in South Dakota. From there, I just headed straight south, the quickest way the GPS directed me to, towards Nebraska. And that's what the following episode is going to be. Episode 34 is going to be just me driving across Nebraska. Believe it or not, there's quite a bit to see, and I didn't even see everything there is to see. I just did like this, the, you know, the central route. The road that goes along the Platte River, and I'm looking it up in the map here real quick, live on the podcast. And I-80. I did I-80. For some of it, I did like the side roads, but it was I-80 most of the time. And eventually I ended up in Omaha. And then I drove back. I drove in Omaha. I had some stuff to do. I had to do an oil change on the Colorado. And of course, I stopped by Lincoln, which is the capital of the state. Visited the Capitol building and in Omaha, pretty nice city. I do want to visit Omaha again. I didn't do much, but what I saw, I liked. Very, very nice modern city. I wasn't expecting that. And also, when I was there, I took a quick detour south into Kansas. Because in northern Kansas, towards the middle of Kansas, they have a monument, and it is the geographical center of the contiguous United States. And as the story goes, I read this somewhere. I don't know if it's true, that they did a cutout of in the shape of the United States, you know, out of wood, I suppose, and that they tried to balance it, you know, and where it balanced in the middle, and that's where they decided that that the geographical center of the United States would be. And this is near the town of Lebanon, Kansas. I didn't even stop at the town. I just went to the monument and then left. And Lebanon is one of those towns. You know, it's like 5 blocks across and you blink, you missed it. So it's in the middle of nowhere, Kansas, but very cool to visit another one of those extreme, if you will, points of the United States. And this one will be like the exact center, the exact halfway point. And that's pretty much the next two episodes in a nutshell. Actually, I told you the Nebraska part, although in Nebraska we get to see a lot more in between, and I'll tell you about it on the next episode of the podcast. Now that we're going to read some of the email and listen to some of the voicemail that you guys have sent. And I don't know where my head is. It's now the next day, and it is already Friday, 10 a.m., and I haven't released the podcast because I totally forgot. You know, I made my stew, which, by the way, I'm going to give you the recipe right now because it came out great. It's probably the best one that we've done. And then I'll read the mail. How about that? And maybe you'll get a slightly longer podcast today. Now that I'm doing, you know, it's all this thing about being locked indoors and not knowing. It's like, you know, the days go by and the weeks go by, and I don't even know what's going on. I just realized it's been exactly 1 month since I came back to Miami with Mini Teeny 2, the Winnebago Micro Mini, the 1708 FB, when I became I'm a brand ambassador for Winnebago Towables. And, well, 1 month there sitting in the driveway. I've done some upgrades to it. There's going to be a video coming up soon at some point. And about, you know, it pretty much I did some of the same upgrades that I did to the original Mini Teeny 1. You know, the dispenser in the shower, the Oxygenics shower head. I put a spice rack and the thingamajig to hang, you know, hangers, clothes. And, you know, I'll show you. But let me tell you, that stew, and if you are vegetarian or vegan, you know, just fast forward a couple of minutes here. But this is a beef stew. I just, you know, get the beef meat from Publix or wherever you are. And first we put some butter in the Instant Pot and we brown it. You know, we brown it as much as possible. The Instant Pot is not the best thing to brown because it doesn't heat as much as quickly as I would like it to. But then, well, that is heating up and releasing some of the juices. I chop some onions and garlic and then add that to the meat, you know, some salt and pepper. You start, you know, salting and peppering it in phases, let's put it that way. Then we chop some green bell peppers and we add them to the mix too. And while that's going on, Ely is peeling some potatoes and chopping some celery and some carrots. Then what I do, I mince the celery, really, right? Chop it really, really thin and put the celery in. And by the way, I added almost the whole Lagunitas IPA at this point, you know, to start getting it going. A little bit of my Cuban Vino Seco, you know, that dry cooking wine at Mundo that I use. And about a cup of water and more salt, more pepper. Put a little bit of cumin, a little bit of oregano, and some paprika. And I'd say, I don't measure it, but I'd say about a tablespoon, maybe a little more of each. A little bit of cilantro, because I like cilantro on everything. And then I'm going to add my carrots, my potatoes, and if you like mushrooms, I add mushrooms too. I had some baby Bella mushrooms there, and I didn't even shopping. I added them, you know, whole. And then you see how much more water you need, and not passing, of course, that mark on the Instant Pot, that that is the maximum. And I try to just barely cover everything, because otherwise it comes out as a soup, basically. So, but you know, try to cover at least the potatoes and all that stuff. And then it's why it's even though this setting will probably make the potatoes too soft, that's how I like to do it. I put it 1 hour at high pressure. You know, I just do the like the meat stew preset, and then I would hit the plus sign until it hits 1 hour, and that's it. If you like a little bit of heat, I also add a little bit of sriracha, sauce, about a teaspoon, you know, just to give it a little bit of heat, and it definitely enhances the flavor. And then you serve that with white rice, and it came out amazing, actually. Now that we did a cooking show here, an Instant Pot cooking show here online, let me get to some of your mail, and hopefully I won't have any technical difficulties here. Okay, here we go. I had to restart the computer because it wouldn't load my mail. And what I do when you send me email and... That's in part why it took me so long to finish the podcast, because I get a lot of email every day, and then I place them into different folders, and I have the folder about, you know, emails that I want to answer here on the podcast. And by the way, some of my answers is according to my experience, so take it with a grain of salt, but it's according to my experience. So if you have a different experience, please let me know. But for example, Ed here asks, Robert, I was wondering, is it a good idea to keep some fresh water in your fresh water tank for emergency? If you're traveling long distances cross country, I have a Class C motorhome. Thanks, Ed. And my answer to that would be yes, actually. It'll make it will make your rig a lot heavier. You know, water is like what, 8 pounds per gallon, a little more than 8, actually. And so if you have like a 50 gallon tank on your Class C, that's 400 pounds. So you know, it can get very heavy very quickly. But still, unless you are like way up there on your cargo capacity, I'd say go for it. It's always good to have water. You know, if you stop at a rest area or where have you, you know, some of these picnic areas that in Texas, for example, there's a lot of picnic areas that don't have facilities, and you have an RV, and that's why you have an RV. So you can have running water, and it's like your home. Or that's my advice. Now, there are a few cases where that advice would be. Another thing in my experience. 200-400 pounds don't make a huge difference in your gas mileage if you're worried about fuel economy. And in my experience, it doesn't make that much of a difference. The main things that would make a difference in fuel economy are your speed, and it's a drastic change between going 50 miles an hour and going 65. And if you decide to push it 70, you drop another 1 or 2 miles per gallon. It's incredible. And the other one is the road conditions. You know, if you're going downhill, obviously you're going to have better mileage than if you're going uphill and that sort of thing. Or wind is also a very big determining factor. But But in my opinion, a couple of pounds of weight don't really make that much of a difference in fuel economy. Now, if you have a trailer that is more prone to sway, that there's one thing there. You may want to either fill it up to the brim or have it empty. Because if you fill it up halfway, that water is going to be slushing back and forth back there. And if you have, especially if you have a light trailer with that is prone to sway, it could be a problem. I have never had a problem with my Micro Mini driving with the tank halfway full. But I've heard anecdotally from other people that they've had problems. So if you have any first hand information about this, please send me an email, robert@travelingrobert.com. And at some point, I'm going to start asking you guys to maybe in the subject line of the email, maybe write podcast in all caps. Just so I know that that is a question. Yeah, maybe that's a good idea. And okay, I have another message from Jerry. And Jerry from Switzerland. Yeah, we have an international audience here. I recently came across your YouTube channel and I enjoy your content very much. Since the pandemic lockdown will ban you from traveling, your post and repost help me go through these times. It's like I'm here. I'm also learning a lot for my upcoming trips, such as Walmart overnight camping. Didn't know that. And also the thing with staying on open land. There is nothing else to spend time in nature. Nothing else than to spend time in nature and being so close to Mother Earth. I am traveling a lot in the U.S. and have been many places you have reported from. Also, for this year, I had in mind to make my journey to the Wild West somewhere, but unfortunately, it appears that I have to postpone my plans. I hope we will see better times soon. Oh, me too, Jerry. And meantime, stay healthy, and my best regards from Switzerland. Switzerland, and one of these days, I'm going to visit Switzerland. I was watching a couple of months ago some videos from Heath and Alicia Paget on YouTube, and they didn't go to Switzerland, but they went to this mountains north of Italy, which is almost Austria, almost Switzerland. You know, it's right there, and beautiful area, and definitely want to go to Switzerland. Perhaps not the most RV friendly country because it's so mountainous, but. Maybe I'll take trains. Now, regarding to Walmart, keep in mind, not all warm Walmarts will allow overnight camping. And actually, I heard somewhere, and this is totally anecdotal, and these days there's a lot of fake news out there, that because of the coronavirus, Walmart was like banning loitering in all of the... I don't think that's true, but... who knows? But great. My first resource for that is one of these apps. I've been using RV Parky. There's also Allstays, but Allstays, since they stopped supporting Android after I paid for them, I'm not recommending Allstays anymore. I like RV Parky, and there's a couple more. And they will mark the Walmarts, they're actually color-coded sometimes, the Walmarts that will allow and will not allow overnight parking. Generally speaking, the ones in big metropolitan areas will not allow it. It's just city ordinances that's many cities have ordinances of no overnight parking whatsoever. And the best rule of thumb, check the app first. And if the Walmart is in green, you know, like it allows... You know, read the comments, see if other people have reported problems, and then just to make sure, call the Walmart. Or once you arrive, you know, just go inside and ask the manager, you know, is it okay if I, you know, overnight I'm going to buy some stuff? That sort of thing. And of course, there's also another app if you want to find, actually, this is a great resource. Thanks to Lewis from Rolling Earthship, he recommended this app, and it is called it's called U.S. Public Lands, and it'll give you a map, and it has color coded whatever is BLM or National Forest or that sort of thing, you know, and all the places where you can stay, and then it's GPS enabled, so if you want to make sure you're staying at a legal piece of land, you just check in the app, and if you are within the BLM or what have you, whatever type of land management you are, you know, like in Florida, we have some of those. Although in Florida, you do have to make a reservation, the water management areas. Those are like some of the few places in Florida that you can boondock. And Drew and Gigi Cartwright, they write, recently discovered your YouTube channel, wanted to know how much we enjoy and appreciate your videos, and say thank you for sharing them. Two quick random factoids I'd like to share with you. My wife was born in Coral Gables, and secondly, she too has been to the racetrack in Death Valley. Anyway, we are delighted to virtually join you on your trips. And while I am not a Coral Gables native, I don't even live in Coral Gables, technically. I live in City of Miami, which is a good thing, because Coral Gables has even more regulations than City of Miami. But we're probably the only two people from this area that have actually been to the racetrack Playa. As you know, that place is very, very remote. It's almost like a whole day trip if you're staying a day in Death Valley. So, yeah, Mark McEwing writes, hello, Robert. Our compliments on your YouTube videos. We enjoy the content and music and your humor. Awesome job providing excellent entertainment. I have two questions, and I hope you can share your experiences. We are planning to retire at the end of this year, purchase an RV, travel our country. We have a great interest in your mini model, and even more, the new unit you currently have. Would you consider a 2019 4Runner with low miles and 5,000 towing capacity adequate to tow a trailer such as you have? I also seem to remember you commenting in one of your videos that you might consider a B-plus type motorhome. Have your travels shaped your preferences of the two types of RVs? Thank you again for your excellent videos, Mark. And the 4Runner, adequate, would be the key word there. This RVs, my old Micro Mini was 3,000 dry. This new one is about 3,300 dry. And once you add the water and everything else, it's probably going to be 4,000, even close to that 5,000 towing capacity that you have. And it might be adequate in flat terrain like South Florida or, you know, but, you know, and don't do as I do as I say. I used to tow with a Kia Sorento capable of 3,500 pounds and tow capacity. And, you know, it was at the time. I didn't know as much as I know now. And that's the car that I had, you know, and I didn't want to go with a smaller trailer. And I just was very, originally, especially at the beginning, I was very careful. I only towed in flat terrain for the most part. And even then, it would struggle from time to time. So, you know, that 4Runner might be adequate. If you do try towing with that 4Runner, you know, belt and suspenders, make sure you have that brake controller that it works, that it's well adjusted, because sometimes it is harder to stop than it is to accelerate. And sometimes it is more important, actually, and more important for your safety, that you are able to stop that trailer behind you. Get the best weight distribution hitch you can afford. They're definitely something with the weight distribution and anti-sway capabilities, because you don't want to lose control of that trailer on the highway. And third, drive extremely conservative. Especially if you're going to be underpowered a little bit or right on the edge, as with that 4Runner, you know, don't go above 60, 65 miles per hour. And, you know, if there's a lot of traffic, keep a big distance between you and the car in front of you. That's that sort of thing that will greatly improve not only your safety, but your mileage and lots of things. And now about the B+. That's something that I've been thinking about for a long time. And a motorhome was always my first choice when I was, you know, living the RV dream or dreaming of the RV life back in the day, you know, when I was reading John Huggins books and watching every YouTube video out there. And as I've said many times, the main reason I bought the trailer, it was because I wanted to have something now, and it was like the cheapest alternative. You know, I didn't want to spend $100,000 on an RV. You know, I wanted to spend as little as possible. Like as I mentioned once, it was like training wheels. I wanted to get something that wouldn't break the bank, where I could like learn the ropes. Eventually, for my current travel style, which is go, pretty much, and boondock wherever. That's what I would love to do. You know, that not stay at campgrounds every 3 or 4 days just to dump the tanks, and you know, a couple of nights. But I would love to just be go and find places here and there to overnight, especially out west. That's. And I'm not that kind of person that is going to stay at the same spot without nothing to do for a week. You know, at least not at this stage in my life. Then if in the future, you know, as I slow down, as I undoubtedly will slow down, maybe a trailer, maybe something even slightly larger than our current Micro Mini would be a good thing, especially if I'm going to stay for a week or two or maybe even a month at a place. If I really find a place that I really love, I wouldn't mind spending a long time there, get to know the area a little better. But I'm still in that tourist mode, like John Huggins used to say. And Roberto Trevino. Hi, Robert. I have a vehicular question. We have a bumper pull trailer, but just a tad smaller than yours. We're looking at buying up something a little bit bigger, but not too big. What size of your RV? What? We like the size of your RV. Okay. We're using an 8-cylinder Lincoln Navigator to tow, but the MPG is terrible. For what I see on your videos, you are towing with Subaru. Not towing with a Subaru, but I'll more about that later. We've been wanting to buy a Subaru Forester, but we didn't think they had enough towing power. Are you pulling with a Subaru, Toyota, Honda, etc.? If you did, have you had to modify the transmission, the radiator in any way? Have you used the same vehicle to tow through all the trips shown in your videos? What size is the engine? We'd be most grateful for any information you can share. Thank you in advance for your time and keep those videos coming. And let me tell you something. I've towed with the Kia. By the way, thank you for your question. That's a great question because a lot of people think that towing with a smaller displacement engine, with a smaller vehicle, will give you better mileage. And that's not necessarily the case. For example, old Kia, it was a 3.5 V6, older, you know, had a 4-speed transmission, so it was a little older technology. I would get 10, 9, 8, depending on my speed, and I was kind of taxing that engine. When I towed with, if you remember when old Kia broke in North Carolina and they rented me, the company rented me an F-250, you know, heavy-duty truck. And that was absolutely a large displacement V8. I still made around 9, even 10 miles per gallon with a bigger engine. And by the way, that truck didn't even feel the trailer behind that. I didn't even put the weight distribution hitch or the anti-sway bar because I actually wanted the truck to go down a little bit because it was such a tall truck that my trailer would still be a little off level, even hooked to the truck. So that truck didn't even fill the trailer back there and was still about 9-10 miles per gallon, even 11. Now with the new truck, the Colorado, it has a 3.6 liter engine and an 8-speed transmission, which probably makes a big difference. And I'm getting, sometimes I get 9, 10, but for the most part, I'm getting 11, 12, 13, even 14. It really depends on the speed that I go. So with that being said, the fuel economy of a vehicle at not towing, for example, like this truck not towing, I get 20s, I get high 20s consistently in highway miles. Old Kia was probably low 20s, and so your mileage is not gonna vary as much by using a small displacement engine towing, because you're still towing, you're gonna be taxing that engine more, and that engine is not gonna give you the fuel economy that it would give you normally. So so that's about it, I guess. That's all I have to say about that. I'm not an expert, of course, but let me see if I have another email here. Otherwise, I'm going to start going into voicemail, which I have a few too. Let me And someone's asking here, I really enjoy your travels. Apparently, we just missed you by 1 week at Montesano State Park. That's in Huntsville, Alabama, by the way. Can you enlighten me on your Wi-Fi setup and how well it works for you in campgrounds? Wi-Fi is pretty sketchy at most campgrounds. And thanks, Clark. And yeah, absolutely. Wi-Fi is... I wouldn't rely on campground Wi-Fi. If you need the internet, you know, it's a nice thing to have, you know, if you just want to, a lot of them, especially the ones that are free, won't allow you to like stream movies. You know, you're not going to be able to watch TV. So my main recommendation is you have to come with you have to travel. You should travel. If internet is important to you, you should have a data plan, AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile, and now they merged with Sprint, so that's going to be interesting. And then just to make sure, because some areas, especially like you, if you go to national parks, they go out of their way not to have cell phone signal. And state parks are pretty much the same way. They're usually on the fringe of that cell phone signal. You get yourself a booster. I have a Wii Boost. I also have a King system right now, which is basically the same thing. And I've spoken with Chris and Cherie of Technomadia, and they also recommend if you have a Wi-Fi router or a wireless router, cellular router, that you install a MIMO antenna, which is a flat antenna. It's actually very similar to like the HD antennas that you can buy, like the ones that you can just stick to the wall. It's just smaller. And MIMO stands for multi-in and multi-out. And when it does, It grabs all the frequencies that it can, and it merges them into one, you know, all the channels. As you know, all these technologies, they have different channels, and sometimes they use one or whatever. And this, at least that's the way I understand it. So that's one thing. Getting some kind of booster for your cell phone signal, in my opinion, is a must, especially if you're going to be out there enjoying nature. And all right, that's about it for regular mail. Actually, I have just hold on, just a reply. Oh, thank you. Yeah, the person who asked about the internet, Clark, he just replied to me saying thank you. Let me see what we have on the speak pipe here, on the voicemail.
Just want you to know I'm 70 and this pandemic has me stuck in the house with not seeing my grandchildren. I've been binge watching you the summer 2019. I'm on episode 19 and I thank you so very much for this because you just make life amazing. Thank you, Robert and Illy.
Hi, you're so very welcome, and let me tell you, hopefully this nightmare will be over soon, and we'll be able to go back to visiting family and going camping and traveling and seeing the world, you know. We are not meant to be stuck indoors, that much is certain.
Oh, yes. How do I get on your podcast for this Friday, April the 24th? You know, for this Friday, I need to know how I can donate to you, you know, like a couple of times. I don't want to do the monthly thing, but, you know, as long as I can donate to you on the live cast on April 24th. But how do I get on to that YouTube live cast? Do I have to be a member? And where do I go to be a member? I mean, I got your, what is it, travelingrobert.com? But where do I go to say, okay, here you go, and become a member? Okay, I forgot to ask you. This is Kathleen again. Okay, so like what time, Eastern time? I'm in Orlando, Florida. What time do you hold your podcast? I always get the recording like a couple of hours after or the next day on YouTube. But, like, when do you actually hold your podcast, you know, Eastern time, which is, like, I'm in Florida. I'm in Orlando, Florida. So when do you hold your podcast? What time do you hold it for this Friday, April the 24th? Okay, thank you. Bye.
Hi, thank you for your message. And I think you're referring not to this podcast in particular, but to the live stream that I do every Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern. And that's on my YouTube channel, Traveling Robert, youtube.com/Traveling Robert. And you can subscribe and hit the bell there so you get notified whenever I'm going to... whenever I'm going to go live, but it's usually 99% unless I am in the middle of nowhere with no internet. It's every Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern. Live stream, you know, we chat, we talk about things. And I've been doing actually also a live concert on Saturdays on my other channel, which is just called Robert Morales, youtube.com/Robertico Music. And, but I don't know if I'm going to do it this Saturday, so I don't want to announce it yet. Anyway, I'm going to reply to you personally on the SpeakPipe, just in case you're not listening to this podcast, but only the live stream. But I wanted everybody else to know, in case you guys don't know, that I do that live stream every Friday at 6 p.m.
I love your show. It's so uplifting. And especially now that my husband and I are stuck at home. We are also travelers, but we just love your show and we love your music. So, you know, stay strong as we all have to. And I look forward to when we can all leave and travel and I could see all your adventures. Thank you.
No, thank you for your message. And let me tell you, when they open the floodgates, it's going to be one of those, right? And I understand if they don't open like Boyd's campground in the Florida Keys, you know, because everybody's right next to each other. I mean, you extend your arm and you can touch your neighbor's rig. But places like Red Top Mountain in Georgia, just north of Atlanta, you know, it's like 50 feet between sites. At that place, I love that campground, and I think a place like that, you know, as long as people don't start coughing on top of each other, we should be close to the end of this this thing. I hope so. I really hope so, because we're all gonna go crazy, right? Hopefully not. We still have a lot of YouTube to watch, but luckily I still have a lot of videos to edit, so I'm not gonna run out of content anytime soon. At least I have two more months that I could provide brand new videos every Sunday.
Hey there, Robert. My name is Michael, and I watched your Nordic road trip and really enjoyed it with my wife. And we love the little RV that you drive, the little Sunlight. I sent you a message through your website today, but I'm very keen to find out if you found a model over here in America that is comparable, because we're looking at doing the same thing, and we wish we could get a Sunlight here in America, but obviously we can't. So
I'm going to cut it out right there, because right after that, he gave me his email address, and I don't want to divulge that, of course. But it's a good subject, because a lot of us, and I'm in that camp, I would love to see some of the American manufacturers, you know, get some design, get more design cues from European manufacturers. And that Sunlight, it was like a 25 footer, and they have like a 22-foot version. It's like a meter shorter in metric, of course. And if I were an American manufacturer for B+, and I think that there will be a decent market for that, just get that model, pretty much copy it as much as possible. It's not like people don't copy each other every day, and just, you know, add like the stuff that we expect in an American RV, like air conditioner and a black water tank, and perhaps, you know, that Sunlight had like two propane bottles like in the rear storage. You know, just have the integrated. Although the propane bottles are not a bad idea, because you can exchange them at a Walmart or a Home Depot. But, you know, Americanize it a little bit. Of course, that it would be automatic transmission and probably gas instead of diesel, but diesel will be good too. And by the way, that Sunlight that he's talking about was based on a Fiat Ducato chassis, which is it's basically our ProMaster. It's pretty much the same chassis in many ways. So American RVs that I've seen similar, I know the leisure travel vans makes a wonder that is very similar. And one of the things that these European RVs have is that big garage in the rear where you can put a bicycle. The only drawback is that the bed tends to be a little higher, you know, in the back. I know Rev makes or used to make a model. There's a Coachman too, the Cross. No, I want to say CrossFit, but it's not. You know, the CrossTrek is doing something similar. So several manufacturers are kind of doing similar stuff. But yeah, I would love to see more of that in the B plus category.
Hey, aloha, Robert Tico. Wanted to know, how can get some of your songs? Is it on CD Baby or some other place? Let me know. Thank you.
Oh, it's everywhere, man. Just search for Robert Morales anywhere. You know, iTunes, Spotify, Amazon Music, wherever you are. And if you want to get a CD, a physical copy, travelingrobert.com/merch. Merch as in merchandise. And I have all my stuff there, including the CD. It's a double CD with every single song that I've done. But yeah, just search for Traveling Robert. I mean, for Robert Morales, my name, Morales, anywhere on the online, and you can find my music.
I really enjoyed your November trip to Alabama. And on the way home, you went very near to Dupuniac. I met some interesting retired guys at the library there. And sometime you might want to talk about that. They have a Chattanooga event in January, and it's similar to the New York Chattanooga. Anyway, you got a lot of good trips. I'm in Sudbury, and I was in Dupuniac this
the Ontario
March,
Canada.
And I made it as far as New Orleans until the virus hit us all, and now we're back home in Ontario, Canada. Thank you. Bye.
Yeah, the Dupuniac, definitely, and that's the panhandle of Florida, and probably if the current situation continues, and like it would be inadvisable to cross state lines. Let me tell you, the panhandle of Florida is an area that I wouldn't mind going back to, and I might, you know, I might, and there's so much to see there. You know, the panhandle is almost as long as the peninsula itself, you know, going east to west. So there's a lot to see there, and of course, I would revisit Destin, which is my favorite beach north of the Caribbean.
Hey, Robert, this is Andy Barley. Can you tell me how I can make a donation to you? Thank you.
By the way, this is not something that I like to be doing all the time, like requesting donations and this and that. By the way, I didn't plan for all these calls to be requesting, like, where do I buy your music? Where do I donate? But if you do want to know, I know a lot of people ask this. The best way is paypal.me/roadnomad, and Road Nomad because that was the name that I had at the time when I set up the account, and they don't let me change it, but that's on PayPal. But you can also write me a check at for today's live stream I got a beer from someone, so it's just Traveling Robert or Robert Morales, doesn't matter, and it's P.O. Box 145012, Coral Gables, Florida 33114. That's P.O. Box 145012, Coral Gables, Florida 33114. And that's my P.O. Box. And I go there once a week for essential travel to mail my CDs and stickers for you guys. And while I'm there, I check my P.O. Box.
Hi, Robert. This is Robert and Linda Valentine. We're looking at your videos, and we love them. We're thinking of down the road to getting a trailer, and we're looking for towing vehicles. Looks like you're using a Chevy Colorado. If that's the case, how do you like it? Does it tow well? And thanks for sharing your videos. We love them very much. Thank you. Bye now.
Thank you. Great question. And of course, when you're towing a trailer, the most important thing you have to do is match the tow capacity of the truck with the GVRW, you know, the gross weight of the trailer. That will be the trailer fully loaded, and just get a couple of pounds to spare always. That would be ideal, of course. And also the pin weight, you know, the hitch weight is also important to know. But yeah, the Colorado is, if memory serves, is capable of 7,200, and my trailer is 3,000 and change dry, and I believe the GVRW is like it would be 7,000, which is, I mean, you would have to like really, really, really load that thing. I don't think it's possible. That's the one thing with this, by the way, but with this Winnebago travel trailers, the load capacity is like almost bigger than the dry weight of the trailer, which is like, it's mind-boggling. But that's the main thing. That being said, for towing the trailer that I have, and even the new trailer tows even better, the Colorado is more than adequate. And as you know, I've crossed the Rockies, I've been through mountains, I've been everywhere. Yeah, I recommend it. I dislike the Chevrolet OnStar system and electronics, the way things work in general. But I know that's just my opinion, and it's secondary. It seems to be a good machine. I mean, the engine and the transmission seems to be well put together. And so far, I mean, knock on wood here in my studio, no major breakdowns. I mean, no breakdowns whatsoever, really, if you think about it.
Hi. I appreciate your show, because I know I'll never be able to go on vacation or visit all over the country. So I feel great. I feel like I'm actually there. So thank you for sharing with us. Take care.
Well, you're very welcome. Thank you for watching and for your support always.
Hello, Robert. I love your videos. You are so cool. You need to make more and more and more. Never stop making them. You know, I enjoyed the one that you went to the Las Vegas and Nevada, and you were traveling on your travels. That was awesome. Robert, that was awesome. You're a sweetie. Keep up the good work.
Well, thank you. Thank you for your message. And yeah, Las Vegas is one of those places that, you know, Sin City, right? Once in a while, I like to go. And right now, by the way, all shut down. And it's probably going to be shut down for a while. I don't know what's going on. And I have a good friend there in Vegas, too. And yeah, it's one of those places that, you know, once in a while you feel like being naughty for a couple of days and just go to Vegas. And then there's so much nature around Vegas. You know, you have Mount Charleston, of course, which I recently discovered in the winter. It's like a winter wonderland, all full of snow. And in the summer, if you're, you know, suffocating at 110 degrees down in Vegas, you can go up there and it's 75, you know, if that hot. And another place that if you go to Vegas in winter, of course, if there's a Hoover Dam, there's Lake Mead, a lot of stuff to do around Lake Mead. And I'm killing time here because the name escapes me right now. Red Rock Canyon. And yeah, lots to do around Las Vegas. It's a really cool area.
Robert, this is Steve Frisch in Texas. I just wanted to call and let you know that I finally got a chance to look at your live concert. I wanted to encourage you to do some more of that. We're all stuck at home, and the more things we have like this, the more fun it is. You're a very talented guy. I love all your videos and everything, but the music is not to be missed. Thanks again. We appreciate everything you do.
Thank you for that message. Of course, if you guys, as I mentioned earlier, check out my other channel. I have like 5 YouTube channels, by the way. Eventually, I'm gonna create content in all of them. But right now, the other channel, which is the Robert Morales channel, which is my music, and that's my oldest channel. Actually, I think I started in 2006 or 2007, and for the past 3 weeks, I've been doing live concerts. I might do one this Saturday. I don't know. It depends on how I feel, how my voice is. I'll let you guys know. But if you want to subscribe, you'll get notified when I schedule the live stream. And those are a lot of fun because I can even take requests live, you know, I mean, from the chat room. So that's really cool. The only bad negative is that copyright, and a couple of the songs that I've sung, eventually they get either deleted or muted. So, you know, I'm trying not to sing, though. At least Hotel California, and I'm not singing anymore. that for sure.
Hi, Robert. This is Michelle. I'm wondering when it was that you went to Michigan. I'm trying to watch that episode. Thank you. Have a great day, and thank you for your videos.
Oh, Michigan. Yes, I went to the UP. I went to Mackinac Island, and then I pretty much drove through the state and until I got to Detroit. And I went to the Henry Ford Museum, which is it's a must. That's one of the greatest museums I've seen. If you're into machinery, and I am into, of course, they have automobiles, as they should, and they have train engines, and even like the huge steam engines from like the industrial era. Are we still in the industrial era? But you know what I mean. And that was fascinating museum. And Michigan, I was there in, memory serves, it was either very late August or early September of last year. And those videos are not out yet. As you know, I'm thankfully, actually, now I was stressing about it for a long time, but now it's like a blessing in disguise, because I have content to show you guys every week, which is good, because otherwise I would be making videos about staying at home during COVID-19, and those are not all that compelling, I don't think. And with that, I want to thank you for listening today to the podcast. This is a rather long episode, but I wanted to get most of the voicemails answered, and I'm going to answer personally a couple of them, you know, because I have the capability of answering back to the people, because a lot of people still don't listen to the podcast. I mean, the numbers for the podcast are much lower than those for the YouTube channel, but I enjoy doing it every week, every Friday, 6 a.m. here on the podcast. And until next Friday, and I'm sorry I'm late today, but I'm really late. I'm going to be like 6 hours late. Until next Friday, thank you so much for listening. And see you on the road, hopefully soon, because soon we're going to once again be living the RV dream and loving the RV lifestyle. We're going to be free in our RV. See you on the road.